And now here's your moderator, Dana Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, Debbie, and welcome everybody to Minds Over Matter. Is this mic working? Yes? No? Okay, there we go. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Minds Over Matter. We hope you are having a wonderful weekend. And if you are having a wonderful weekend, we're here to bring it down a few pegs. No, we hope you will join us over the next hour or so and continue the merriment. And Minds Over Matter is an audience participation quiz program. So we hope you can call and participate. That's very, very important. Our lines are basically open right now. If you'd have a question or answer on, well, no answers yet, maybe, but a question on current events, movies, history, literature, geography, television, radio, and just about everything else, it's a great time to call. It does tend to get a little bit crowded toward the end of the hour, so give us a call as soon as you can. That number is area code 415-841-4134. I've had this piece of paper for so long that I can barely read it anymore. 415-841-4134. Or you can call toll-free. That is toll-free number at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And just to remind you of our email address, which is mindsovermatter, that's one word, mindsovermatter, in lowercase, probably. And again, mindsovermatter at yahoo.com. Feel free to email us anytime. We don't read them during the show, but over the course of the week, I can mull over an answer and take the criticism a little more lightly. And again, that's mindsovermatter at yahoo.com. Or, and you can hear our show online anywhere in the world simply by going to kalw.org. That's kalw.org. And since Debbie is here and always doing her usual fine, fine job, the podcast should be available reasonably soon after the show, like 5 or 6 minutes, at 10 minutes, at kalw.org. So in case you can't wait to hear your voice again.
Or yours.
Or mine, yeah. And we're going to start with a round of introductions. Lori Fisher is here. Thanks,
he is.
Lori.
He's happy to be here.
Here to apologize.
For all of your sins.
No. He's here.
Wait, for the hosting thing?
Yeah. No,
you
did a wonderful job.
Well. You didn't listen.
Thank you so much.
You were in Austria. I did hear part of it. Okay.
Yeah.
Just part of it.
You did a good job.
He had several offers.
I started to cry and I had to turn it off.
He had several offers not to do it again.
My agent's been negotiating behind the scenes.
He did a fine job, and thanks a lot. That was nice of you to sit in.
I enjoyed it.
Appreciate that. So, and we're going to start with a round of introductions. Here's the first. Jerry Nachman was told several times last week on his 70-something birthday how little he's changed. Many have seen that as the basic problem.
Thank you, Dana. For nearly six decades now, Lori Fisher has decided that he would not like to thank the Academy. Once again, along with actors and artists who have legitimate reasons to be irked, he has been snubbed by Mr. Oscar.
He has been, and our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, wishes Jerry Nachman a happy birthday and just realized that he has known him so long that Jerry was only in his 50s when they first met.
So that is
very
us,
sweet.
And we begin the questioning with Jerry Nachman.
And now you are in your 50s, yeah, so don't be too smug. Okay.
The good old days.
Who is the youngest solo performer ever to go platinum?
So this would be a record, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an album, I guess. Yeah, it couldn't be. Do albums go platinum? I guess they do.
Is it an album or a single?
I don't know.
And it's an individual, not somebody.
It's a
person. So Michael Jackson went platinum very young. Would it be him?
Nope.
Okay, or he?
Stevie Wonder did, too.
He did.
But I don't think it's Stevie Wonder.
Is it in the... you want to give us the decade? They didn't give them out before the 50s or 60s.
No, the 40s.
They
started giving out gold records.
I don't know about platinum.
The gold records started in the 40s.
I think we're pretty sure it's within the last decade.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, in the last decade.
The last decade.
The young Bieber kid, or...
Could be.
Miley Cyrus, people like that. They're young, but yeah. Michael Jackson was even younger.
How old was he?
I think Michael Jackson was 8 when he was in the Jackson 5.
Yeah, but he wasn't a solo.
No, he wasn't a solo.
That's true.
Yeah.
So I was going to... I thought maybe it was that kid saying, "All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth."
Eddie Hodges?
Eddie Hodges?
No, not Eddie Hodges, but...
What was his name?
I don't know. Okay. Little something or something.
and Would this be a child, like under the age of 12? Do you have the age on the thing?
Probably so.
Can you tell us if it's a man or a girl or a boy?
No, I told you enough already.
All right. Okay, why don't you read the question once more?
Okay, who is the youngest solo performer ever to go platinum?
That's a good question. And you think recently, in the last 10 years or so?
Yeah, pretty sure.
All right. Jerry's pretty elastic on these dates sometimes.
No. I am sure of this.
All right. And, all right, let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is about the actor Paul Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
What was the only movie he played in which he sang?
Which he sang?
Well, he was on Broadway. He sang on Broadway in Call Me Madam, but
right.
He didn't make the movie out of that. He wasn't in that movie.
Oh, he was in the Broadway show?
Yeah.
In the George Sanders part?
Yeah.
Oh, he darn.
With Ethel Merman?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay, let me think for a minute.
Was he a singer in the movie, or did he just kind of incidentally sing?
Let's see. No, he wasn't a singer in the movie, no.
He wasn't. He played an opera singer in a movie called, was it Strictly Dishonorable or something like that? But I don't know.
Or maybe he wasn't the only movie.
but, I mean, I don't know if they actually showed him singing opera. His role was that of an opera singer.
Oh, okay.
What decade was it in? Can I ask?
The 30s.
Oh, he made a lot of movies in the 30s. It's a good question. I should know it. Can you tell me one person who was in the movie with
him? Let's see. Francis D.
Oh.
It's an old movie.
Yeah. Did he sing in Little Women?
Yes.
Okay.
No kidding.
Huh. Yeah.
Who did he play?
He played a music professor.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. I remember that.
That's great. Give yourself a bell.
Okay.
Yeah. He sang a solo.
I guess he sang just a song.
A song, basically. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Professor Bauer, remember that.
That's great.
And the second question is, what was Robespierre's first name?
not Baby Snook's little brother.
Not Pierre Robespierre.
Yeah.
Francois?
No.
That's also a good question. Oh, boy.
It's like asking Cher's first name.
I know. That's a good... I should know this, too.
About Pierre Robespierre.
No, I'd just be guessing. How about Jean or... Jean Valjean. Jean. No. Oh, no? Okay. What is it?
It's Maximilian.
Maximilian. Oh,
that sounds right.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. And Laurie, it's your turn.
All right. Well, with the Academy Awards nominations out this week, I have some questions in that, and a name I like saying, Benedict Cumberbatch, just fun to say.
Yeah.
If The Imitation Game wins the best Oscar, he will have appeared two times in a row in the Best Picture, and that has happened very few times, that the same actor has been in the Best Picture 2 years in a row. I'm going to give you some actors' names. You tell me which picture they appeared in, which Best
which
Picture
two.
They appeared in. Yeah, it's two.
So two times two in a row? Or
yep, two times in a row.
Okay, but it has to be in a row.
They are.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll limit Dana to two. There's five, I think. Clark Gable's the first one. They're all famous. Meryl Streep is number two. Christopher Walken is the third. John Gielgud is number four. And John Goodman, believe it or not, is number five. So each of these people appeared in two Best Pictures in a row.
Once.
Clark Gable,
yeah.
Meryl Streep, Christopher Walken, John Gielgud, and John Goodman. And I'll limit you to two of the five.
Okay.
Streep has to be Selfish Choice in the movie before or after that. Is that correct?
Say it again.
And whatever movie she was in before or after. I don't have a title. But I'm just thinking out loud.
All right. I'm not giving you a hint on
no,
that.
No.
Clark Gable is It Happened One Night and Mutiny on the Bounty.
That's correct. Give yourself a bell on that one. And then a few years later, he was in Gone with the Wind, of course.
Right.
But that doesn't count. Okay. And that was 1934 and 1935. That's right. The earliest of them.
Okay. And the other ones on the list once more?
Meryl Streep, Christopher Walken, John Gielgud, and John Goodman.
Christopher Walken, is Annie Hall one of them?
Yes.
And the one he got his Academy Award for, with The Deer Hunter, right?
That's it, yeah. In 77 and 78, very good.
Right.
All right, so you're
out. Maybe Streep is The Deer Hunter and something on either side of it.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Right.
The next year.
Yeah, the next year.
Yeah.
What would the next
maybe
year?
That's Sophie's Choice.
And she was she was supporting actress in
okay,
the next year.
Sophie's Choice, Deer Hunter.
It wasn't Sophie's Choice.
Oh, it wasn't Sophie's Choice.
No,
that
Julia.
No.
Oh. Julia?
No.
Okay.
We have half of Meryl Streep and none of John Gielgud and none of John Goodman.
Okay. Gielgud, that's hard. Right.
Yeah, Gielgud's fun.
Anyway,
so we'll leave the rest out.
All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Ever Matter.
Hi, this is David Price Weldy in San Francisco.
Hi, David. Good to hear from you.
Hi. I would guess for the question 2 years in a row, perhaps, for Meryl Streep, The French Lieutenant's Woman and Sophie's Choice?
No. One of them for sure was The Deer Hunter. We got that one.
Oh, okay.
And The French Lieutenant's Woman wasn't Best Picture of the Year, I don't think.
And then for the question with regards to the youngest platinum, would that be, is it Audria McArdle for Annie cast album?
No, it isn't.
Okay.
Good guess.
Yeah, probably went platinum.
Yeah. I have a question. Since we're talking about records, the Guinness World Book of Records lists only one family with three generations that have number one hits. Who is that family?
Number one
record hit.
Pop hits, okay. Three in the family, huh? Wow.
So it's not the Fondas. I keep, yeah.
No.
So these are music. That's great.
How many, can I ask how many men and how many women in these three?
They're all men.
They're all men.
Oh.
Three generations. So grandfather. All have the same last name?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Well, that should make it easy.
Okay. I think, yeah.
For some reason, it doesn't, though.
No.
Is it? Yeah, wait.
Three men. Jeez.
Three men. So that's not Elvis Presley. It's not.
No.
It's not Crosby. It's not.
Is it in country music, perchance?
Not at all.
Not at all. Ooh, that's a good hint.
Dana, you were close.
I was close with
Elvis?
Yes.
Oh.
I was. I was close with Elvis. You mean of that era?
Yes.
I see. So kind of rock and roll sort of. Early rock and roll.
Doo-wop.
Gosh. Okay.
So it's not going to be Ozzie Nelson, Ricky Nelson, and Ricky Nelson's kid.
Kristen Nelson.
Right.
You're right.
I am right?
Yeah, Nelson, the group, Nelson.
Oh,
Nelson had his number one in 1934 with Over Someone Else's Shoulder. Ricky Nelson's were in 1962. I believe there were two. And his sons, Gunnar and Matthew.
That's right.
Was in 1990.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he had that.
Over Somebody Else's Shoulder, I Fell in Love with You. I know that song.
That's Ozzy's?
Yeah.
What was the Nelson kids, what was the name of their group?
Nelson.
Yeah. Half Nelson.
Yeah.
All right. Give me a bell on that one. That's good.
Yeah. Thank
good question.
Thanks, David.
I forgot that Ricky had those really talented kids.
I didn't know he had any level of talent.
All right. Let's see here. These are the three most. I'm kind of a book collector up to a point, as long as I don't have to spend too much money on it. And these are the three most valuable first edition book novels by American authors. So, in other words, the three most valuable, for a collector, the three most valuable American novels, first editions.
Uncle Tom's Cabin?
No.
Oh.
Huck Finn?
No. I'll give you each a couple of guesses.
Okay.
Not Huck Finn?
No.
Oh, okay.
They were all very popular books.
And they when all they 19th out. Century or after?
None of them are 19th century.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
So again, these are the three most valuable first edition American novels.
And they were big hits, so that wouldn't be...
They all sold very well, yes.
Yeah. How about The Great Gatsby, then?
That is one.
Okay.
Yes. That is one. So again, these are the three most valuable first edition American novels. The Great Gatsby is number one.
How about The Sun Also Rises?
Yes, that is nice. Also one. All right. Now you have to come up with a third. All right, there you go.
And those are all worth more than Huck and...
Yes.
That's amazing, yeah.
And Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Yeah.
That's surprising me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So there's one left on
one
that
left.
List.
We'll leave it out?
Yes,
okay.
Leave it out. And what famous American author was a direct descendant of one of the Salem witches?
Ooh.
What famous?
So they really were witches, huh?
Yeah, this
accused witches.
His earlier, well,
alleged
know.
Witches. I
alleged
believe.
Witches.
Okay,
his relative or his ancestor, I should say, was convicted but managed to escape before they were burned at the stake.
Wow!
It's a famous American author.
Famous American author. Yes.
And is she one of the? Does she appear in the Crucible? This witch. This. Alleged
good
witch.
Question.
That's
yeah.
a good question, and I don't think so.
Because then I can think of...
I don't think so, but no, I'm not sure. What famous American author was a direct descendant of one of the convicted Salem witches? Supposed
oh,
witches.
Is it Hawthorne?
Not Hawthorne.
Because he had something, some guilt that he bore for family in there. Okay.
All right. Leave that out. And Sue knows this. She probably taught this in class.
Yes. She's passing notes in class.
All right.
I have to turn her in.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Linda Nelsarino.
Hi, Linda.
Hi. I guess on most valuable book, how about Main Street?
Not Main Street.
Okay. All right. Well, somehow the occasion of Elvis's 80th birthday was not noticed on Minds Over Matter. It was January 8th this year, so I'm surprised that managed to slip by.
I'm not.
3 minutes of silence.
Yeah.
What other major celebrity died just 3 days later?
And what was the date?
Okay. Oh, you need to know the date? Well, okay.
I do.
I remember that summer that...
Uh-huh.
Happened, I think. And I think, wasn't it Crosby, Bing Crosby?
No, I'm not sure when Bing Crosby died.
So you don't know the year, more or less?
Is I do know the year, but...
She doesn't want to say.
I don't think it's that difficult.
Groucho Marx?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
It was right around.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I thought it was the same day because
it was a bad summer.
In the paper the same day, yeah. But it was actually 3 days later.
Right, so. Right.
Okay, all right. Of course, this is a very important year for... Elvis people, and one of the interesting facts that came out is about Elvis's mother. She bought him an interesting gift on his 11th birthday. Can you tell me what that is?
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting gift.
Is it
have to do with his performing career?
I
don't want to say.
Didn't I read someplace like she dressed him in girls' clothes for a long time? Something like
well,
that.
Well, I didn't come across that, but of course that was done in earlier days. All the, little boys were dressed like girls.
And they had some secret baby language that only those two knew, and they would talk to each other in it all.
Well, they may have.
Even when they grew up.
Yeah, really? That may be that's far more interesting than what I have, but...
Well,
anyway.
How about a guitar?
Yes, okay.
That's
definitely
it?
A guitar.
Okay.
It cost $775 at the Tupelo Hardware Company.
You mean a guitar?
A guitar. Right. Now, what was it that Elvis was actually hoping to get on that birthday?
The dress.
Something in it.
His two front teeth. Yeah.
So
a bicycle?
Well, there's a debate about that. That was one possibility, but there's another.
I haven't heard that debate. A puppy? A dog?
No, not a puppy.
I don't know.
So there's a debate about whether it was a bicycle or something else?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So what's the other? The something else?
Little red wagon. I don't know.
No.
Huh. A bike or
could be
a pony?
No.
All right.
A radio.
No, they didn't have a record player at home, which is interesting. But that wasn't what he was hoping for.
No.
I think you know too much about Elvis.
We don't know.
Well, I hope you won't hold it against
me. No, we won't hold it against you. We don't know.
You don't know.
What is it?
He wanted a BB gun.
Oh, he shot his eye out.
If his mother had gone that way, perhaps...
A whole different story.
Yeah,
a whole different story. Okay, and just the last thing. Can you tell me where Elvis stands on the Forbes list of dead celebrities as to how much money he makes in a year?
You mean where he is on the list? Like, is he number one, number two, kind of thing?
Exactly.
He's high. He's,
sure he is.
I'll say third.
Other guesses?
I'll say
third.
First.
First, third.
Sixth.
Sixth. Okay. You're kind of skirting around it. But
what is it?
Debbie says.
Speaking of dresses. No, he's second.
That's what Debbie said.
Right. Yeah, do you know who the first one is?
Is it Michael Jackson?
It is Michael Jackson. Mm. And it's quite staggering to me. He is worth $170 million a year.
Wow.
And Elvis is worth 55, so that's significant.
Three times, yeah.
Yeah, then the third one is Marilyn, and she's worth about half of what Elvis is.
All right. Thanks, Linda.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. And Jerry, it's your turn.
I have three political questions. No Democrat has succeeded another Democrat. This is not good news for Hillary Clinton. Since what president? That's the first question. Second question, who was the last president without a college degree? Third presidential question, who is the only president to win on his third try? You can guess one of those.
Well, Truman followed Roosevelt, so that would be the Democrat.
But Johnson followed Kennedy.
Oh, that's right.
Elected, I should say. Elected.
Well, Johnson was elected.
Johnson was elected.
And Truman was elected.
How did I get go
so you're talking about when there no assassination was anywhere in the mix.
I guess that's what I am talking about. Yes, thank you.
So they didn't
clarifying that. Yeah, okay.
So it's before Truman and Roosevelt.
And then
college in the third try.
And in the third try. Okay.
Then it's
okay, I'll repeat them while you're thinking. No Democrat has succeeded another Democrat since what president? Not counting
without
assassinations. Yeah,
right.
Or dying in office. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Second part: who is the last president without a college degree? And the third part: who is the only president to win on his third try? And I'll give you one each. You can't.
Well, Mitt Romney wants to be the one who wins on his third try.
Yeah, I know.
The Truman had no call.
Correct. Very good.
And
it didn't
seem to hurt him at all. But,
yeah.
So that's yours.
All right. I'm still working on that president.
I don't know the other Democrat. I'm working on the Democrat one, too.
How about Martin Van Buren and Andrew Jackson?
For what?
For the Democrat, following a Democrat.
No.
After that.
Really? They were both Democrats.
I got it. It's James Buchanan following Franklin Pierce.
Correct. 1856.
Good.
All right.
So we're looking for the third try guy.
Yeah, the third try guy. Okay. I thought that was the easiest one, but I guess not. Okay.
All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Vig Radul on the Carnero.
Hi, Vig Radul.
I got a couple of movies I'd like to ask questions about. Right. One of them I thought was pretty obscure, but I don't know if Dana would think it. It's made in 1950 called Highway 301, starring Virginia Gray and Steve Cochran.
Ooh, sounds great.
That's pretty obscure.
Yeah.
And
Dana has it on his cell phone.
There's something fairly unusual about the film, actually, before the film begins.
On screen?
Begins?
There's some kind of introduction or something?
Right.
Oh, is it a warning? Is this one of those where they would warn you to drive safely or not read pornography
Well, it's apparently, based on a true story of some armed robbers on the East Coast.
Don't try this.
Lock your doors.
It's about as B a movie.
But is it a public safety, public welfare kind of thing?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, they're just talking about, how terrible these these gangs are. Apparently, when they go in and rob, they go in don't wear masks because they shoot everybody. So they're no witnesses.
Right. But so that was it then.
It's the governors of Virginia, Maryland, and North Carolina all give an introduction to the movie.
Oh, okay, wow. All right.
That's wild.
Interesting.
And it was also the film debut of Robert Weber.
Who?
Robert Weber.
Who's that?
Character actor.
Yeah.
Okay. Long career.
That's pretty obscure, yes.
It is obscure. That's okay. I don't mind.
Pretty true.
I like it.
A little more well-known movie, The Roaring Twenties.
Oh, sure. All right. Much better known to me.
That one, even I've seen.
So they had the three amigos in World War I come back to New York, and who were they?
Bogart.
Cagney, Bogart, and, Jeffrey Lynn.
Right.
Right.
And their occupations when they returned?
Jeffrey Lynn became a lawyer, Bogart became a rum runner, and Cagney became a bootlegger, I guess, basically.
Right. Very nice.
So Jeffrey Lynn wants to have his law office where in New York City?
Where?
Is it significant, like it's the Empire State Building or something?
Well, it's a specific building.
How about the Empire State Building?
You get a bonus if you get the floor.
Well,
I want the bonus.
How about the Chrysler Building?
No.
I know it took place in the 20s.
Oh, yes, the 20s.
There wouldn't have been a Chrysler Building.
It wouldn't have been the Empire State Building either, right?
How about the Woolworth Building?
You got it.
All right.
17th floor.
28th.
28th floor. All
so
right.
Close.
There you go.
Hey, could I also, a while back, you had a question on there about the oldest college in California?
I think it was the oldest college. Was it in California or west of the Mississippi? I'm not absolutely sure about that, but I remember the question. It was. Do you want me to tell you?
Well, no. The correct answer you guys said was UOP, which was 1851, but Santa Clara was mentioned, and that you said that wasn't correct, but it also was founded in 1851.
Oh, okay. All right. But is it possible the UOP was maybe a month or two ahead?
Yeah, I don't. They didn't give. I looked it up knowing they were both the same year, but I couldn't find a month.
Okay. So. Well, thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. Our panel tonight is well-known Bay Area author Jerry Nachman. He's also celebrating a birthday. And, of course, Lori Fisher, who teaches at Diablo Valley College. And I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. And you're listening to us on 91.7 FM. That's KALW. Your local public radio station. And the number to join us here with a question or answer is area code 415-841-4134, or we'll have a toll-free number just for you at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And, Lori, I think it's your turn.
Okay. As we know, people were somewhat disappointed with the Oscar nominations that no one of color acting or directing was nominated. And I was disappointed that the movie about Roger Ebert called Life Itself, a great documentary, wasn't nominated for Best Documentary.
Really? That's amazing. That's so much publicity.
Yeah.
And it's about
terrific.
A film critic. But
it is.
I was pleased that my favorite movie of last year was nominated for Best Picture, The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Anyway, so I was reading a little Roger Ebert, who read this great column in the year 2000 about the most influential films of all time. And it's a great list, and he makes it clear these are films that influenced the film industry, not the best ones. Mm-hmm. Four of them are kind of new in that they were in 1959 or after. All the other ones are sort of not even sort of. So what four films are on his list of the most influential films of all time, the earliest of them
in terms of influencing
other
motion
films,
picture making?
Yeah. And 1959 on my list is the oldest one. So they're all 59 and after that.
Oh, so.
Yeah, so it's not like Chaplin.
Citizen Kane. No.
Yeah, it's not. No, that would be.
So they all have to be after 1959.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And they are all influential, and you can sort of make sense out of them. They're well known.
The Sting?
No, not The Sting.
Dr. Strangelove?
No.
Influenced. Can I ask, is it a technical thing or is it a creative, otherwise creative thing?
It's a great question. It's a little bit of both on all of them. Okay. So they're all very creative, and I would say—
Is there a Kubrick film there?
No. I'd say two of them are kind of indie films, but really well known, and in their indiness, did something unusual. And then the other
one
two
made
are
for
technical.
$700 or whatever.
Kinda, yeah.
The Blair Witch Project.
That's it. That's
oh,
one.
That
of them. That's the most recent on his list. The Blair Witch Project.
How is that influential?
In that people, they learned
other
that
people felt they could max out.
Anybody can make a
yeah.
Anybody,
cheap
movie.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
That kind of
with
stuff.
Their
right.
cell phone. Yeah. All exactly. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And using your cell phone, using unknown actors.
Was it $700 or $7,000? $7,000.
No, it was about 20. It was 20.
It's probably 000. Only in my notes. Okay, so that's exactly wonderful.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so we're looking for the three from 19. That was the most recent. I think that was 1999 even.
That long ago.
Yeah. They have it here someplace.
And they never did anything else after that?
I don't think they did.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
Not really. Okay.
Okay, so we're looking for the three other films.
All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter. Are you there, caller?
No.
Nobody? Sorry about that. Next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Robert in Berkeley.
Hi, Robert.
Hi. quickly, Descendant, Salem Witches.
Yes.
Did Laurie already guess Nathaniel Hawthorne?
He did, but it wasn't that wasn't the one I was looking for anyway.
Oh, well, I know Hawthorne's a descendant of one of the judges.
Yes,
at the,
but not the witches.
Yeah. Well, possibly. in fact, interestingly, some say that he changed his name from Hathorne, without the W, to distance himself from the judge.
Ooh, interesting.
But I'll be interested to find. My other wild guess was John Cheever.
Not John Cheever.
Okay.
No.
Well, on a kind of current events question, which would be better if Pauline Tyson were on the panel, Charlie Hebdo has been in the news. And my questions are, one, why Charlie, and why Hebdo?
Charlie Brown.
Oh, really?
Charlie Brown is a hero of the people who founded it.
Right.
Ah, okay. That is one of the other theories is that it had to do with the kerfuffle when they mocked the death of Charles de Gaulle. But, yeah, that's certainly one of the more likely ones that...
Hebdo, then I should have... It's funny, I don't remember reading about Hebdo, the Hebdo part.
Well, it's a slang word for magazine, I thought.
Right? Is it?
Okay. Not exactly.
Or slang for something. French slang for satirical, maybe?
You're kind of on the right track. It's not slang, but it is a shortened form of the full word.
Mm-hmm.
The full word is hebdomadaire. And that means weekly. So it translates to Charlie, the weekly magazine. And it comes from Greek origin, meaning the seventh, having to do with something that happens in a seven-day cycle.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
So too bad Pauline wasn't there, but you guys...
She would have loved that question.
Been all over that.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
I was all over it a little bit.
Yeah, you were.
You were partially all over it.
I don't know French at all.
So. Okay. Well, in Friday in the New York Times, it was a reminder that it's the 150th anniversary of Alice in Wonderland this year.
Of a lot of things.
Yeah. And that is one of my favorite books of all time. It was certainly one of my favorite books when I was a kid, and it's still one of my favorite books, actually. So there have been many, many, many versions, film versions and television versions of Alice in Wonderland, and many, many famous actors have played roles in it.
Never a really good one that I know, maybe you do.
I like the 1933 version, but I'm not going to make a claim that it's a great movie, but it's an interesting film. Well, we'll get
to
that
question.
In a minute.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you, so I picked out from all the different TV and film versions some famous actors who have played parts in Alice in Wonderland, and I'm going to give you their names. I want you to tell me the role that they played. So these are all famous actors who appeared in a version of Alice in Wonderland. Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me what famous role they played. Number one, Gary Cooper.
Oh.
Number two, Dudley Moore.
Okay, wait a minute. You're going too fast.
Okay.
Moore, okay.
Dudley Moore. Number three, Peter Ustinov. Or Ustinov. Number four, Peter Sellers. Number five, Sir Ralph Richardson. Number six, Cary Grant.
It was quite a group.
Number seven, Shelley Winters. And number eight, W.C. Fields. Excuse me. I beg your pardon. And so, again, these are taken from all the different versions of Alice in Wonderland. They've had many
famous
actors.
These are film versions?
Film and TV.
And TV, oh.
And all these actors play different roles. These are no repeats here. They're all different roles. And tell me what role they played in Alice in Wonderland.
Didn't Gary Cooper play the Tin Woodman?
He did not. That's okay. That's the Wizard of Oz. Number one, Gary Cooper.
What did you say? I'm sorry.
Number two, Dudley Moore. Okay. Number three, Peter Ustinov.
Alice in Wonderland.
Number four, Peter Sellers.
Sorry.
Number five, Ralph Richardson. Number six, Cary Grant. Number seven, Shelley Winters. Number eight, W.C. Fields. Okay,
well,
I'll give you each a guess.
I am indeed showing my age. Yeah.
That's all right.
Alice in Wonderland. Why
Jack
I
and the
that?
Beanstalk? Didn't you play that?
No.
Alice in Wonderland.
Okay. Did W.C. Fields play the Cheshire Cat?
He did not.
Okay. But one of these guys did.
This was W.C. Fields' least favorite role of all time, by
really?
The way. Yes. I'll explain after later. But he hated this role.
And just one woman on the list is interesting.
Yes.
Shelley Winters, who she would have played. Well, the Queen of Hearts, and I'm going to go with that.
No, okay. No, not the Queen of Hearts.
That's a good guess, yeah.
It's got to be a woman part, I assume.
Yeah, yeah.
So, anyway, and...
When were these movies with Richardson and Cary Grant and Sellers made, anyway?
Well, they're spread over a long period of time. In other words, the first version's in 1903, I think, and then...
No, but with these fairly contemporary actors. I never heard of them.
Well, there have been versions. There have been a couple of versions each decade, basically, from the... In the 30s, the 50s,
really?
The 60s, the 70s, the 80s, yeah.
So they're never shown. I never heard of them.
How many different productions are represented on your list of eight here?
Exactly.
How many? Eight different productions?
No, I won't. There's I won't go repeaters. That far. I'll say maybe six.
Wow. Okay.
So. But it's been made over and over and over
again. Yeah.
So anyway, and we are a little past halfway through the show, so let's repeat any questions that haven't been answered yet. Jerry?
All right, well, I'm looking for the only president to win on his third try. And I'm looking for who is the youngest person, solo performer, ever to go platinum.
All right. And Laurie?
I'm looking for actors who have appeared in who appeared in the Best Picture of the Year in consecutive years. We have half of Meryl Streep is the Deer Hunter. We need the other one. And we're looking for John Gielgud and John Goodman. We have none of them. We got Christopher Walken and Clark Gable. And then Roger Ebert picked it in the year 2000, wrote about the 10 most influential films of the century. And starting in 1959, there were four of them. We have the Blair Witch Project. We're looking for the other three.
All right. So what famous American author, and it's a fairly contemporary author. The author's died, but a pretty contemporary author is a direct descendant of one of the convicted Salem witches in the Salem witch trial. And I have a list of the three most valuable first edition American novels. In other words, if you were to find a first edition, you should pick it up. The three most valuable first edition American novels. And so far we have The Great Gatsby, which is number one, The Sun Also Rises, which is number two, but we're still looking for number three on the list. Remember, it's an American novel. It's a 20th century novel. Keep that in mind. And then I gave you the many famous actors have appeared in different versions on TV and film of Alice in Wonderland, and I gave you the actors, and I asked you to tell me what role they played. Gary Cooper, Dudley Moore, Peter Ustinov, Peter Sellers, Ralph Richardson, Cary Grant, Shelley Winters, and W.C. Fields. So,
Dudley Moore, how about the rabbit? You know,
you're in the right general area.
Good
but
casting,
no.
But
yeah. All right, I don't know any of these.
And
let's call in people.
Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Yeah, hi. This is Greg in Alameda.
Hi, Greg.
The second consecutive Best Picture Oscar winner that Meryl Streep was in was Kramer versus Kramer.
That's correct.
Oh, very good.
1979. Thank you.
Yeah. And actually, you know, and I have somebody to add to that list, which was pretty recent, is Russell Crowe was in
true.
Two Best Picture winners in a row.
Yeah. It's on my list. I just didn't ask him.
A Beautiful Mind
him.
And yep. Gladiator?
Okay. Yeah. Very
right.
good.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so those most influential films since 1959.
Yeah.
I have two guesses. How about, is one Jaws?
No, surprisingly.
I was going to say that.
It's the summer blockbuster.
And then how about Star Wars?
That is one of them, 1977. Very good.
Okay.
All right.
Got all right.
So two more we have to
there's
get.
Two more.
Thank you, Greg. Bye-bye. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Peter in Glen Park.
Hi, Peter.
Got some guesses here for the young platinum. How about Charlotte Church?
No.
Oh,
that's
very
good.
That's good.
Very good guess, but no.
Yeah.
How old was she?
Oh, she was 10 or
10,
something.
11, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Pretty young.
And for the Salem Witch Descendant, how about Richard Henry Dana?
Not Richard Henry Dana.
Okay. And for a valuable first edition, how about Margaret Mitchell's Gone with the Wind?
Not Gone with the Wind.
Okay. And influential films, how about Easy Rider?
Boy, that should be on the list, and it's not.
Yeah, you're
yeah,
right.
That's such a good choice. I would put it there myself, but nope.
And I have a question.
Yes.
What country's capital is not the seat of its government?
Is it Bolivia by any chance?
That's actually one of the two.
I know Sucre and La Paz.
Yeah.
And then Johannesburg or South Africa?
No, South Africa actually has three capitals.
Right. Are you thinking of the Netherlands?
Yes.
The Hague and Amsterdam.
Exactly.
Okay.
Good work.
All right.
Good job, guys.
Thank you very much.
All right.
How about John Updike is the descendant of a witch?
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Is it a New England writer like Cheever and Updike?
You know, I'm not absolutely sure. He may have been born in New England, but he lived in California most of his life, I believe. I'm pretty
John
sure.
John Steinbeck.
No. Very well-known writer. Very, very well-known American writer. And if you'd like to, we have a couple of lines open. If you'd like to give us a call, 415-841-4134, 415-841-4134. Or toll-free, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. This is Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7. And, Jerry, why don't you go ahead?
Okay, I think I have to recuse you from this, Dana.
You don't have to.
I think I want
Nobody's forcing you.
Okay, I'm sure you know it. That's why.
Yeah.
Who is the only major member of the Casablanca cast that did not live to see its release? Do you know?
Not live to see its release.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
And it's a major member.
Yeah.
So you watched this movie the other night, didn't you? The movie that they mentioned us in?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right.
I get a lot of questions from Turner Classics.
Yeah, I bet you do.
So is it...
it's a strange
movie. So how
movie,
about Conrad Veidt?
Conrad Veidt. Very good. Conrad Veidt. Very good.
Yeah, because I pick it was between him and Paul Henri, but he lived a long time. Yeah. And so he died before it was released?
Yeah, he had a heart attack, died before.
Very young.
Yeah. Well, it was
53 or something.
No, he was 50.
Yeah. I don't know.
You knew that.
Yeah.
Let me sneak in a quick one because I want to get a baseball question while Lori's here.
Thank you.
Honus Wagner's baseball card is famously the most valuable of all, but what is the second most valuable Topps baseball card?
Ooh.
Is Honus Wagner the Topps baseball card?
Huh?
It's the most
expensive.
That's not
expensive. Topps, is it?
No, Wagner was not. No,
that was like a cigarette
around.
Or something.
Topps wasn't
it was
around.
A cigarette card. Yeah, but this is a Topps card. Huh?
Yeah, so it's more contemporary.
Much more recent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it a beginning year of a
rookie year?
Rookie year.
Yeah, those are usually the
and
most
is it a Hall of Fame
valuable.
Type player?
Yep.
How about Roberto Clemente?
No.
In right era? Is it in the 50s?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
So the big guys would be Mantle?
That's it.
All right.
Mantle. 1952 rookie card.
Oh, somebody out there. Tom Barber has that card. One of my buddies.
He has it?
He might.
Oh, okay. Might. Wow.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter. Are you there, caller?
No.
Is it me?
It is you. Yes. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I've got two things. One is for John Goodman.
Yes.
It's The Artist and Argo.
It is.
Oh, very good.
Both beginning with the letter A, too.
Yeah. AR.
Yeah.
And is it Britney Spears is the youngest woman, whoever? The artist?
No,
that's not a bad guess.
Okay.
No.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Very good.
She wasn't
Goodman.
That young. She's...
She was in her teens.
Yeah.
No. And we do have a couple of lines open. If you'd like to give us a call with a question or answer, the number is area code 415-841-4134. Again, this is Minds Over Matter, 415-841-4134. Or you can call toll-free, 866-798-8255. That is 866-798-8255. Laurie, you have something?
I do. So as we all know, Barbara Boxer is standing down from her seat, and I was looking up. I had not remembered who held those two Senate seats. I think they've both been occupied by Feinstein and Barbara Boxer since about 1992.
Who was before them?
Who were the two people in each seats before that, the elected people before Feinstein?
Cranston's?
Cranston's one of them.
Yeah, right.
And then who was before Cranston? I'm looking for the...
Oh, before Cranston.
And then also the other seat, too.
Gosh.
Boxer's in... Cranston seat.
Was it a Republican before Cranston?
Yes.
Was it Hayakawa?
No, but he's in the other one.
Tom
so, yeah.
Kuchel?
Both right. Tom Kuchel and Hayakawa.
Tom who?
Tom Kuchel.
Yeah.
Oh, Kuchel. Yeah, Thomas Kuchel.
Very
yeah.
good. So we're looking for one more, the one right before Feinstein. Because Hayakawa was two before
oh,
Feinstein.
Oh, yeah. Who was before? Yeah, that's...
Let's see. When was Feinstein elected?
92.
Is that what you said?
Two.
Oh. And it said... Democrat.
No, oh, another Republican.
Oh.
Yeah. So three of the four were Republicans.
Oh, is it that kind of right-wing education guy? Very
no,
controversial.
Max Rafferty?
Max Rafferty.
No,
it was,
he wasn't
that was
senator.
Earlier.
Was
yeah.
he saying he was never senator?
He would know.
Yeah.
He tried.
He did.
Yeah.
State superintendent of education, I think.
Yeah, right, yes.
But another Republican, well-known.
Wasn't Murphy.
After Murphy.
Oh, I know who it was. The very liberal conservative from San Mateo or down the peninsula. What's his name? You know, the war veteran?
Oh, Pete McCloskey?
McCloskey.
No,
oh.
He wasn't senator.
Oh, he was never senator.
No,
that's right. That's right.
Huh. All right. Conservative Republican? Moderate?
You know, I'm not going to label him because it's hard to sort them out. I think by Republicans...
Oh, no, I know. The governor. The,
yeah.
They became governor.
Yeah. That's him.
Wilson.
Pete Wilson.
Pete Wilson.
That's it.
Yeah.
Very good.
Good. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Back to fairly
concerned.
Sorry, audience. Yeah.
Yeah. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
This is Kurt in San Francisco.
Hi, Kurt.
I have a geography question about San Francisco.
Okay. Excellent.
What is the location that is traditionally considered to be the geographical center of San Francisco?
Ooh.
Isn't it in the Mission?
No. And this is a little bit, it's kind of open to...
Do you want, like, the cross streets, or is there something there, a landmark of some kind?
Yeah, what, did you hear that?
The cross streets or a land?
Yeah, cross streets.
Is it a landmark?
It's got a name. It's got kind of a dramatic name. It has something in common with Greek mythology.
Oh. That's a good clue.
Oh, all right. Debbie says Mount Olympus.
And Debbie is right.
Oh, very good,
Debbie.
Where's Mount Olympus? I don't even know.
Where's 17th and what?
In Clayton. At one time, there was a very dramatic statue at the top of it, and there were no apartment buildings around it. And now it's unfortunately been obscured, but that is considered to be the geographical.
Very good.
What area is that in?
In the Coal Valley, Upper Haight area.
Right.
The Clayton.
Right.
How did I miss an entire mountain?
Yeah.
Oh, I know where that is.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right.
Near me. Yeah. Okay.
Was that it? Anything else?
No. Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Good question.
Bye-bye. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Stephen in San Francisco.
Hi, Stephen.
Two guesses and a question.
Okay.
The president who won on his third attempt was Abraham Lincoln.
No.
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 Okay. The first edition book.
Yes.
Was The Sound and the Fury by Faulkner.
That's a very good guess, but no, not definitely a contemporary of Faulkner's, but not that one.
Okay. I went on a Haight-Ashbury tour today, and they were talking about various people down there, of course, in the hippie era, and this is a question you may know. Janis Joplin was evicted from her apartment, but what was the reason? Why was Janis Joplin evicted?
Was it a kind of a typical reason, like not paying rent, or is it something...
Yeah, it's something that you wouldn't... something mundane like that.
Okay, so not singing too loud or...
Noise pollution?
Well, noise pollution could be one, but that wasn't it.
Okay.
Wasn't it?
Paying rent was not it.
Too many people living in her pad?
Singing too loud or something like that? Or band rehearsing in her apartment?
Well, I said noise pollution.
Noise pollution, sorry.
She had a pet.
Yes.
She had a pet?
She had a dog, and she was evicted because she wasn't allowed to have dogs.
Oh.
How just a dog, that? I would have thought something more exotic.
One more
cheetah or something.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Was Peter Ustinov in Alice in Wonderland, was he a caterpillar?
He was not.
He would have made a good one.
He was he was one of the characters in one of the poems. I'll give you that.
Oh, so no. He's...
Tweedledee or Tweedledum?
No.
Would that be W.C. Fields with Tweedledee or Tweedledum?
No, neither one.
Was he the Jabberwock?
Nope.
Darn.
Thank you.
We're striking out at Alice in Wonderland.
And next call.
Hi. I have a couple of guesses. Actually, one I'm positive on. Cary Grant was the Mock Turtle.
That's correct.
Yeah, I remember
very good.
That. Yes.
And
good.
Was Ustinov the Walrus or the Carpenter?
He played the Walrus in the Walrus and the Carpenter. Very
okay.
good.
He was
and
the
then,
Walrus.
Yes.
John Gielgud was in Arthur.
Yes, but it wasn't Best Picture.
It wasn't Best Picture.
I don't think so.
I thought it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
if it was, it wasn't in a row with the other two.
It wasn't in succession.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
It's Daryl from Alameda.
Hi, Daryl.
I have a couple more of the Alice in Wonderland.
Good.
Mostly from the ones from the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
W.C. Fields was Humpty Dumpty.
Yes, he played Humpty Dumpty. He had to wear a big headpiece over his head, and he hated it because he had claustrophobia.
Body suit, cause he's an egg. Anyway, I think Gary Cooper was the White Knight.
Right, he was the White Knight. Very good.
Cary Grant was the Mock Turtle.
He was.
What are some of the other ones?
The other ones left, we have Dudley Moore, Peter Sellers, and Ralph Richardson. And Shelley Winters.
Shelley Winters.
Oh, yeah, they're later. I'm going to guess that Peter Sellers was the March Hare.
Very good, yes.
Dudley Moore, I think, might have been the Mad Hatter.
No, not the Mad Hatter.
And Ralph Richardson, I don't know about.
Okay. You did very well.
That's it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7. Hope you're enjoying the show. We do have a couple of lines open if you'd like to give us a call. Area code 415-841-4134 with a guess, a question, or an answer. 415-841-4134. Or you can call toll-free 866-798-8255. Let's see. Let me have something quick here.
Is one of your four books Thomas Wolfe novel?
No. Mm-mm. And let's see. What is the U.S. state where gluten-free food is the most popular?
The most popular food?
Yeah. Well, no, where they eat the most gluten-free food.
The state of deprivation.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not so bad.
Where they eat the most, got to be per capita, right? So it's,
per capita.
Oh, man.
California.
No.
I think there's a lot of I think it's going to be a small
Florida.
State.
No.
Not Florida?
Mm-mm.
Massachusetts.
Nope.
Am I getting close? Is it in the New England area?
It is not.
No, it's not.
It is not. What is the state where they eat the most gluten-free food per capita?
Utah.
No.
Okay. A lot of old people watching their diet. And Utah's always the state that's the right answer to everything.
Everything,
yeah. Or Arizona.
And let's go to a call.
Gluten? Yeah, okay.
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, is that me?
It is you.
I have a guess that the youngest first nickel platinum.
Yes.
Was it Jackie Ivanko?
Ivanko, very good.
Oh, very good.
It was indeed. Who's that?
Who was the interim senator after Pete Wilson became governor? He infamously voted for Clarence Thomas.
Oh, interesting.
He was there for just 2 years.
Oh, the guy who was, he was appointed, right?
Yes.
I looked that up. It was Seymour.
That's right.
Yeah.
And who?
John Seymour.
Died the same day as Michael Jackson.
Oh, is that true? Oh, Debbie says Farrah Fawcett.
June 25th, 2009.
Oh, Debbie's
bad timing. She's on top of it.
Yeah, she's knocking him out. Wow.
Thank you.
Okay.
Did you ask who Jackie Ivanko is?
Yeah, I did.
She's just kind of young, ethereal, blonde. She's been on all week on KQED. She's now about 15. She started when she was like 8 or 9, had this totally mature voice. And I don't know what kind of classical singing.
And she's the youngest to go platinum.
It sounds vaguely familiar, but I couldn't.
But it's pop music or more?
No, it's not. It's kind of classical music.
This is what they bring out on KQED when they have a pledge drive.
Yeah, that's all week, yeah. Yeah, she's kind of totally created by NET, I still call it, PBS. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
No, she's, I don't know, she's probably scoffed at by people like Joshua, but she's kind of interesting. She's a phenomenon.
Well,
she's like 8 or 9 and had this voice of a 30-year-old, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
All
right. Okay.
Tremendous.
Mm. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello?
Hi, you're on.
Great. Was the senator actually Pete Wilson?
Yeah, well, he was. Yep, somebody got that, but that he was the senator before Feinstein. That. Very good.
All right.
Thank you. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Thomas in Berkeley.
Hi, Thomas.
I came in late, so I don't know what's happening. Basically, influential films. Did Star Wars get on that list?
Star Wars was on the list, and somebody got it, but it's good to hear it again.
Okay. Alice in Wonderland.
Yes.
What am I looking at here? I'm guessing, totally, but was Dudley Moore the Dormouse?
Yes, he was the Dormouse.
Geez. Oh, very good.
And this thing about an actor in two
best pictures in a row.
Are you still working on John Gielgud?
We are.
All right.
Got him?
Well, I'm trying to think of the order.
We'll accept
Red, the Chariots of Fire.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gandhi.
Yes. Chariots of Fire and Gandhi. Very nice. 81 and 82. Really good.
And so that's all of them?
That's all of them.
Okay. That's all I got.
Thanks, Thomas.
I don't remember him in Gandhi. Who did he play?
Oh, he played a British official.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it was the Viceroy. I don't remember. But
and somebody named Ian Charleston was also in both those movies.
Yeah.
But I don't know Ian Charleston.
Ian Charleston
well, he played one of the runners.
One of the runners. He died of AIDS. He died of AIDS about six,
really?
7 years after that. Yeah.
And do you remember him in Gandhi, too?
Yeah. He played a journalist, I think. Or maybe that was Martin Sheen. And anyway, he had a reasonable role.
And Walter Pidgeon did it, but I figured that would be too easy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. How Green Was My Valley and
Mrs. Minerva.
Mrs.
Minerva.
Minerva.
That's right. And let's see. Next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Michael from El Cerrito.
Hi, Michael.
Let me take a wild guess on the influential film. Is Cabaret on the list?
No, it's not. Not for Mr. Ebert.
Okay, now how about the descendant of a Salem witch? Would that be Gore Vidal?
It would not.
Ooh,
that would be a great guess.
So, yeah. Yeah. I don't think so.
Well, that's all I have for you.
Oh, thank you.
Is
all
the right. descendant Thomas Pynchon?
It is not.
All right.
You're thinking of that was the name of the family in the House of the Seven Gables was Pynchon.
Oh,
that's why that's why you were thinking of that. Is Halloween one of them?
No.
Okay. All right, time to clean up here. What do we got?
Okay, well, the only president to win, excuse me, on his on his third try is Ronald Reagan.
Oh, that's true.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you would knock that off right away.
Oh, well.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Oh, well.
That's it?
Shows you're mortal.
I am.
The Roger Ebert influential films that we don't have. The most obscure on the list is Shadows, the John Cassavetes film from 1959.
Oh, yeah.
And then another one, Toy Story, which changed the whole animated film industry completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, Alice in Wonderland, then the ones that nobody got. Ralph Richardson played the caterpillar, and Shelley Winters played the dodo bird.
We should have got.
What famous author was a direct descendant of one of the convicted Salem witches? Ray Bradbury.
No.
Yes, Ray Bradbury.
Wow.
And the three most valuable first edition American novels, The Great Gatsby, The Sun Also Rises, and The Maltese Falcon.
Really?
Yes.
That's a surprise.
If we didn't get your call, we do apologize. Please remember that Minds Over Matter is here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Our panel tonight was author Jerry Nachman from Dabo Valley College, Lori Fisher. Thank you very much, Lori.
Thank you.
I've been your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. Of course, our thanks to Debbie Kennedy for basically holding us up and answering a bunch of the questions and doing a great job. So thanks, everybody, and please join us next Sunday at 7. Take care. Bye-bye.